Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and views, of course, for this hour, Dr. Jerome Corsi, who's an investigative journalist and writer, and has done a great job of getting together a lot of information on certainly what's happening as far as immigration is concerned. He's written a recent book called The Late Great USA, and of course he's written on some of the things that will concern all of us, and that is the move on the part of the executive branch of government to establish an authoritarian society in America, and under the guise of fighting terrorism, to actually create a situation where the president, at any moment he wishes, can declare a dictatorship in America. Now, people say it couldn't happen here, but everything is in place. They have permission to use the U.S. military against the American people, which has not existed for well over 130 years. And they have passed new legislation where the president can declare a dictatorship without the authority of Congress for an indefinite period of time with no checks on his power in case there is some sort of a national emergency or an epidemic or an attack on this country or this civil unrest, and these things are frightening. Well, I'm going to let Dr. Jerome Corsi pick up the story from there. Jerome, is your book out yet, your new book about the great USA?
Yes, Dr. Stan, it's been out for now for a couple of weeks, and it hit the New York Times bestseller list. It's number 28 on the extended list.
Now, who published it for you?
It's published by WorldNet Daily.
All right.
WorldNet Daily Books, and it's in the third printing now, so we're rushing new copies to the stores and to resupply Amazon.com. The books will be available on Amazon.com as well. It can be ordered now, and it'll be shipped probably just in about 3 or 4 days.
All right, very good. And so we will be, of course, carrying the book here. I think it's a great book.
Thank you. And you're right, you know, the main story of the book is how the late great USA, how the Bush administration is advancing the plan that the globalists and the multinational companies have to create a North American union, that we're on the same path that Europe has gone down to over a 50-year period of time, as Europe began 50 years ago in 1957 with a coal and steel agreement, and they advanced through the economic means to go to a common market and ultimately to a European community, headed towards a European Union, which was declared the Treaty of Maastricht, and then by 2002 the euro as the European currency. And I argue that we're on the same kind of a incremental, step-by-step stealth path. We began with NAFTA. Now we have declared the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. Our leader talking about creating a North American community, and we're going to end up with a North American Union, and the new currency for us has been named the Amero. So if there's even a name for the new currency, I think we better take this seriously.
I do as well, and I appreciate the writing you've done, and you can read much of what Dr. Corsi has written at certainly WorldNet Daily, writing there, and almost exclusively now was writing at Human Events. But certainly he's done some of the fundamental work. If you don't care about what's happening out there, ladies and gentlemen, then you'll have nobody to blame when we lose our freedom. Because we do have people in positions of power who have a different worldview. They hate America. They hate sovereignty. Their dedication is this idea of a new world order, a new world religion, and a new world leader. Well, you go ahead and pick the story up there.
Well, Dr. Stan, the Security and Prosperity Partnership was a key event. It was the declared at a summit meeting, and it was in Waco, Texas, on March 25, 2005, and three leaders met. It was President Bush together with Vicente Fox, President of Mexico, and Canada's Prime Minister, who was then Paul Martin. And the at the end of this meeting, they met at Baylor University. There's pictures of the library where they met on the White House website. They came out to for a press conference, the three leaders had microphones side by side, and the backdrop behind them was the mosaic of the three flags blended together as one flag, and a continental map across which was written the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. And then from there, we find that gets created a website on the Department of Commerce website. It's called spp.gov, sampeterpaul.gov. And this website documents in the 2005 and 2006 report to the leaders that there's 20 working groups that are drawing from virtually all of the U.S. departments and their comparable departments in Mexico and Canada. And these working groups are changing our administrative law and regulations into North American format. So we have a North American Transportation Working Group, a North American Energy Working Group, North American Health Working Group, a North American Environment Working Group. And on page 81 of the book I published, I got a Freedom of Information Act request. I got the organizational chart of these working groups from the U.S. government. You can see the little boxes of the working groups go up to report to three cabinet secretaries in each government. In the U.S., they report to Secretary of State Rice, Secretary of Chertoff of Homeland Security, and Secretary Gutierrez. Then the reporting moves into the White House, to the National Security Council and the Homeland Security Council, and finally to the Office of the President. Now, if I can get the organizational chart of the working groups, so SPP.gov denies that anything is happening. It's all just a dialogue to increase competitiveness in North America of our businesses. But, you know, if I can get an organizational chart of trilateral bureaucracy that's not supposed to exist, then this is a shadow government, and our government knows it and produces an organizational chart which documents it. But yet this chart is not published for the American people.
And I think this is what's so important for people to understand is they do not want the American people to know, because they know most people love America. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Dr. Jerome Corsi. He's talking about the organizational chart he was able to get under the Freedom of Information Act. And he's accumulated a great deal of information, which he's gotten by requesting this specifically. The elite deny anything is happening, but then, of course, over in Europe, they know that the Europeans don't want to give up their sovereignty. In fact, both France and either Denmark or Holland have voted against the Constitution, so they're just going to do an end run around that. Because the elite don't care about us common folks. The elite know what's better. They want the power. They believe that this is the path to world government. There'll be no more war, so they fight wars all the time so that we can do away with war. And if that makes sense to you, why, then you probably can sympathize with their position. Doesn't make sense to me to fight wars and do away with wars, but that was the reason for the First World War, the war that was fight to end all wars, the war to make the world safer democracy. And when the League of Nations failed, then they had to have a Second World War, and that was, of course, bring about the United Nations, and since that's not doing too well, we're going to have another great war to get the people to be willing to give up their sovereignty, to surrender their freedom to the elite. And of course, the fact that they deny anything is happening, and yet Dr. Corsi has so much of their information. Sydney, you were very, very fortunate to get this chart on this administrative chart. How do you think it was that they actually released this, or do you think they were more or less forced to release it to you?
I'm not sure. You know, Dr. Stan, I got almost 2,000 pages now of information on the Freedom of Information Act request from the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and the vast majority of it has come to me with no redacted or blacked out parts at all.
Do you think there may be some? Do you think there may be some people in our government who really want you to get this information, who want the American people to know, but they don't dare come forward themselves?
It could well be, because it was remarkable. The many Freedom of Information Act requests I've done, this one came across, and I continue to get documents, and they're generally complete documents. It's surprising to me. I've been writing about how the plan is, once the North American Union is created, the North American community, it's our multinational corporations, and they're driving the agenda to plug this into the World Trade Organization. I mean, you have to see the picture. It's not just illegal immigration. That's a symptom. The plan, why the borders are being left open, why President Bush has a war on terror, yet has in 6 years refused to secure our border with Mexico and Canada, is because the agreement was made and the Security and Prosperity Partnership that the borders with Mexico and Canada are going to be opened and we're going to be integrated. And I write at length about the NAFTA superhighway, this trans-Texas corridor, the 4-football-field-wide highway that's going to be built parallel to Interstate 35. And I show on page 95 an architectural artist's rendition of what this truck, train, passenger car, pipeline, tower electric corridor looks like. 4 football fields wide. We've never built a corridor of this magnitude anywhere in the United States, or anywhere in the world for that matter. And it's going to connect down to ports in Mexico, in Manzanillo and Lázaro Cárdenas, which are south of Texas. And the plan is to bring these container ships from China, because, of course, our multinational corporations want, even if it's unfair trade, which it is, China subsidizes its currency and uses slaves and near slaves, but that puts the cost of labor to close to zero for the multinational corporations. Now they want to put the cost of transporting the goods into the United States as close to zero as possible. So with these huge container ships, and we're building container ships that will hold 12,500 containers, they can be sailed by 15 people in the crew. It's a lot cheaper to sail that container ship to the ports in Mexico south of Texas, unload them there instead of Los Angeles and Long Beach. We'd have to use longshoremen that are union workers and pay their dues and their fees and their salaries. Instead, Mexican dock workers, Mexican trains, Mexican trucks, and the containers can come up through the NAFTA Superhighway, up through Interstate 35, being redesigned in the Super Corridor. Kansas City, on Interstate 35, has declared itself to be an inland port. Of course, the water's not in Kansas City, it's down in Mexico, and they're putting in a Mexican customs office. But yet I wrote an article in WorldNet Daily this week that even Vice President Cheney denies that there's NAFTA superhighways. And that's, again, the denial process going on within our government. He wrote that in a letter to a constituent. But in the next sentence in the letter, Vice President Cheney says he's going to support the states transforming the I-35 corridor to meet the interstate highway needs of the 21st century. Well, that's all code words for the Vice President Cheney is supporting the Trans-Texas Corridor, which is one of the core movements developing this NAFTA superhighway.
Well, you know, I think it's the most amazing thing that they've been able to advance this. And, of course, other than you, Lou Dobbs, and, a few other people on the national level, everything has been done to conceal the truth from the American people. And the truth is really so amazing that our leaders have no loyalty to America. They have no loyalty to the Constitution that they've sworn an oath to God to uphold. And certainly they become domestic enemies of our way of life. And they're interested in establishing first the North American Union. And, of course, that will eventually be merged with the European Union, the South American Union, the African Union, the Asian Union, certainly the Arab Union. All of these are being established at the present time. And then, of course, once they have them all together, they will be able to unify them. But the first thing to do is to do away with national sovereignty. And this really does away with national sovereignty as we know it, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does. I mean, it's remarkable. I tracked this NASA superhighway and the Vice President Cheney's denial, and I compared it. There's a trade association, NASCO, the North American Super Corridor Coalition. It's in Dallas. And I show that NASCO, that this corridor coalition does the same thing. It says there are no plans to build a NAFTA superhighway. It exists today as I-35. Well, that's confirmation that I-35 is appropriately called the NAFTA superhighway. And NASCO itself wants to distinguish somehow. It's okay to talk about a North American super corridor. That's in NASCO's name. That's what the acronym means. But yet they deny that there is a NAFTA superhighway except for Interstate 35. I mean, they want to mislead people. I also show that Jeffrey Shane, who is an Undersecretary of Transportation at the U.S. Department of Treasury, U.S. Department of Transportation. By the way, Jeffrey Shane also heads the working group, the North American Working Group on Transportation. Well, Jeffrey Shane testified to a subcommittee in the House on Highways and Transit, that subcommittee of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and Shane said he was not familiar with any plan at all related to NAFTA or cross-border traffic. And then Representative Peter DeFazio questioned aloud whether Shane was just gaming semantics, and the congressman jumped all over him. They said, look, here's what's going on with the NAFTA superhighway. You know, here's the Trans-Texas Corridor. Here's the plans. It's going to be financed by Cintra, C-I-N-T-R-A, an investment consortium in Spain. The NASCO map originally on their website, which I published in WorldNet Daily and discuss at length in the book and give you the references for, shows the Continental Highway connecting down into Lázaro Cárdenas and then up into Canada, connecting over to Montreal and to Vancouver in the west. But yet NASCO, when they got criticized, and we start writing about them, they've done now 3 makeovers of their website, and they've taken this map off. So every time we expose what's going on, you get a vice president saying, no, it's not happening. And the people who, you know, are inclined just to believe that denial don't look at the evidence for themselves. It's why I've left my articles up on WorldNet Daily and Human Events. You can search my name, Corsi, C-O-R-S-I. The articles all have links in them. The book, I made the book easy to read. It's 235 pages, but there's 30 pages of footnotes. You can read the book in 2 settings, but you can go to the footnotes and see the original government documents for yourself. So rather than believing Vice President Cheney's denials, go look at what he's denying and make up your own mind. Well, people look at the government documents, they're shocked, and they say, yes, this is a NAFTA superhighway, and it is being constructed with the intent to bring millions of containers into the heart of the United States, with cities like San Antonio, now even Denver, and Kansas City declaring themselves inland ports. Now, there's no water around Denver. It's not the Platte River. It's Denver wants through the plains, the Ports Corridor Coalition, to build an I-35 4 football field wide highway and a rural path that will come up through the panhandle in Oklahoma from Laredo, Texas, and connect into Denver along Lyman, coming in along Route 70, Interstate 70. These plans exist. They're on the Internet. People can read them. I give you exactly where to go. In the book, I show you exactly where to go to see the documentation on the government websites.
And, of course, this will mean that the Mexican will be able to come to this country. They'll be able to get onto our social welfare system, enjoy all the benefits of being American citizens. And the reason, of course, the president wants to give the people who are here illegally amnesty is because we're going to unite the peoples of Mexico, the United States, and Canada. But he cannot tell the American people that. Oh, he says, I am against amnesty. I just want the people who are here to be able to stay here and become citizens. But I'm against amnesty. I mean, I believe our official language should be English here in the United States. But if you go to his website, you'll find that all of his speeches are available in Spanish. I wonder why. well, pick the story up there's your own, but certainly, you know, I believe that at least a certain segment of the American people are aware of what's going on. Certainly
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
And that's how we're going to keep the terrorists out of the United States, is by guarding the southern border of Mexico. And you may not think that sounds very logical, but so much of what's going on today is not logical. We sent our boys halfway around the world to bleed and suffer and fight and die in the sands of Iraq. They're fighting over there, of course, as we know. The terrorists, but of course the president refuses to stop the terrorists from coming in through our southern border. They're fighting for democracy and freedom, but we're losing our freedom here at home, because our freedom is based upon the unique construction of our nation as a sovereign nation under a constitution, under God, and of course the president, or I should say the people who control the president, because that would be Dick Cheney and the globalists, are intent upon doing away with national sovereignty and merging us into this North American Union, as we say, as the, all the other unions they're creating throughout the world. And the fact that people are not hearing this being discussed every day is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think, because the globalists control the media largely, and thank goodness for Joe Farah and WorldNet Daily, and for talk radio and shortwave and the internet, and the ability, at least on a certain limited capacity, to get the information out. Lou Dobbs, and it's very gratifying to know the vast majority of the American people support sovereignty. They just can't quite connect the dots. And that's why Dr. Corsi's work is so valuable. Well, do you think we're making any progress? People are beginning to understand?
Oh, I think so. Dr. Sam, we've got now 14 states that have passed resolutions that say no North American Union, pull out of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and don't build any NAFTA superhighways. Congressman Virgil Gould introduced a similar motion, House Concurrent Resolution 40, into the Congress. He's gaining supporters saying the same thing.
Now, wasn't there some sort of legislation that was in the House saying no NAFTA highway?
Duncan Hunter submitted last week a resolution, an amendment, to the transportation funding bill for the Department of Transportation that said that no funding could be used for working groups in SPP that were going to build NAFTA superhighways. Now, that passed overwhelmingly in the House. Something like 362 members voted for that amendment. And it was when the transportation bill passed, Duncan Hunter's amendment was included in it. Now, if that goes through the Senate, we've got to follow it and make sure the senators keep Duncan Hunter's amendment in the bill. When it goes to the president, if he signs the transportation bill, he'll have to disband the Security and Prosperity Partnership Transportation Working Group that's actively building this NAFTA superhighway.
Well, that would mean that they would be following the law, but so often they really don't care, it seems, what the duly elected representatives want, what the American people want. They have their own agenda, and they really are above the law. I mean, they make the law. They lie consistently when they're testifying before Congress, and but people like George Tenet, and Gonzalez and the others are never prosecuted for perjuring themselves or lying under oath. They seem to have almost like a built-in immunity. They can say whatever they want to, and despite the fact that we know they're lying because of conflicting testimony, nothing is ever done to them.
Well, that's right, Dr. Sand. And also, these executive orders. I mean, this whole move to sell our highway infrastructure, George H.W. Bush signed on April 30th, 1992, Executive Order 12803, and it allowed our infrastructure to be privatized so the highways could be sold to private investment interests, including foreign investment consortia. That's how now we have a whole website at the Federal Highway Administration on PPP showing how to sell our highway infrastructure off to foreigners.
Well, we're already doing it. They've already sold off the New Jersey Turnpike, the Ohio Turnpike. They've sold the Chicago Skyway. They're selling our roads all across America. And so, but there doesn't seem to be much of an outcry about that. I don't think most people understand. Of course, New Jersey says we've got to be able to meet our obligations this year, but what are they going to sell next year and the year after that? Go right ahead, Jerome. Well, we'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Jerome Corsi as we discuss the North American Union. Thank you. this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Jerome Corsi. We're talking about his new book, The Late A Great USA, and of course it's a takeoff on that wonderful book from many years ago by Hal Lindsey, the late great planet Earth. And is that sort of where you got the idea for your book?
Yes, and in fact Hal Lindsey was kind enough to give us a comment on the back of the book. He said, "The late great USA is a real winner that sounds like a clarion call, sounds a clarion call to the nation. The book uncovers the careful deceptions of a powerful elite who want to undermine our sovereignty before we realize it. I consider this a must-read for every American." That's what Hal Lindsey said about The Late Great USA. And it was with his permission and using his title, as I say, now we're at the risk of losing the United States of America, just like the states of, you know, the countries of Europe. Well, they still exist. Italy, Germany, France, all the other countries have compromised their sovereignty to be in the European Union. Today it's the nameless bureaucrats in Luxembourg and Brussels who tell Italy what laws they can pass and what laws they can't pass. And if these bureaucrats don't like Alitalia because it's been subsidized since it was created by the Italian government for creating tourism, the EU bureaucrats, these nameless, unelected people, just tell Italy it's got to sell Alitalia or restructure it. Stop subsidizing it. It offends them. Well, and the, you know, the Italians have no say over that. Otherwise, they're thrown out of the EU, and the Italian legislatures have to rubber stamp whatever the Brussels and Luxembourg bureaucrats tell them to do. And we're headed in the same direction. That's why it's the late great USA. We've already got Chapter 11 NAFTA tribunals, which can overturn U.S. laws if it adversely affects a NAFTA investor. We have the Supreme Court deciding that we cannot impose our environmental regulations on Mexican trucks when they come across the border. Under NAFTA, we have to let them come across the border with any environmental disasters they want to cause. We can't enforce our own laws. And that's the kind of condition in the state that countries, the great countries of Europe, now find themselves in, having subjected themselves to the North American Union, allowed their currencies to dissolve into the euro. They don't even have control over their own monetary system.
And I fear that is soon going to happen in America. In fact, it's my sincere belief that one reason their central bank is, our central bank is doing what they're doing, is to destroy the dollar.
Well, exactly right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was just saying that it is my belief that the central bank of the United States, the privately owned central bank that controls the banking of this country and certainly issues the money that's printed by the Treasury Department, but it always at the behest of the Federal Reserve System, which is a privately owned bank made up of people who are globalists who hate America, and they've been able to create all sorts of money to enrich themselves and buy up the media and the corporations. But their ultimate goal has always been this new world order, this new world religion, this new world leader. Well, before we go on, Dr. Corsi, I'd like you to get out a website where people can get your information, and of course we will be carrying your book, as we do carry your last book, and that was on the Minutemen. But Sydney, if you'd like to go ahead and get about your website where people can get your information.
Yes, I understand. The book, The Late Great USA, The Coming Merger with Mexico and Canada, it's a WorldNet Daily book, and I've left my articles. My articles are still archived on WorldNet Daily. Just search my name, Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, and the book is regularly advertised. I've signed copies, which are on special sale at WorldNet Daily. It's also available on Amazon.com. The book hit the extended New York Times bestseller list. We're number 28. And we ran out of books. We're into our third printing. If you go into the bookstores, they may not have them, but order it, and that'll force the bookstore to place enough of an order where we can get more printed and get them supplied in the bookstores.
Oh, we will, of course, be carrying the book. I'll be calling Joe Fair's office tomorrow to make sure that we have a supply. And we've already been getting orders. I was very interested. This is the first time we've had orders for a book that we haven't even announced we were going to carry.
Well, thank you.
So I think that there's a tremendous amount of interest out there for the people who know what's going on. And most Americans love this country. Most Americans want to preserve this country. It is just a small group of very wealthy and powerful people who have a different worldview that, of course, are intent upon destroying it and are quite willing to send our boys overseas to fight in no-win wars. So that, of course, is a great diversion as we establish this North American Union, which is simply a stepping stone towards the loss of all freedom for all people. And as incredible as it may seem, it's a long-range plan. And behind that, I believe there are powerful spiritual forces who know exactly what they're doing. Well, do you mind if we take some callers? I think
that'd be great, Dr. Sam. Let's do it.
All right, fine. We've got Frank calling from New Jersey, and if you're out there, you'd like to ask any questions, certainly our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Frank, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, Dr. Stan. Thank you for being my favorite mentor. I'm reading out of your occult hierarchy a quote that Dr. Dennis Cuddy provided from Arnold Toynbee. This is a very important verse. We are at present working discreetly with all our might to wrest this mysterious force called sovereignty out of the clutches of the local nation states of the world. All the time we are denying with our lips what we are doing with our hands.
And that, of course,
that's the trend for international affairs since the war. Arnold Toynbee, International Affairs, November 1931, page 809.
All right, thank you so much, Frank.
God bless you.
I think it's important to understand that Toynbee was a member of the Cecil Rhodes Secret Society, which was created back in 1891, and that they called it the Round Table Group, and Toynbee was a member of the Round Table. And this was simply one of a number of groups that were working, even at that time, that already fought the First World War to bring about a world government. They were preparing for a Second World War, and of course these are the same people who were actually working to finance Adolf Hitler. We had to have an enemy, and they were in the process of establishing the Nazi movement. Now this was 1931, but believe me, there were powerful forces at that time behind the militarization of Germany. And anybody who doubts the fact that we were contributing to the build-up of the military of Germany long before the Second World War, so we could have a war to bring about the United Nations and the move towards government. And so, as Toynbee said, I mean, we deny with our lips what we're doing with our hands, and it's been going on for a long time, hasn't it, Jerry?
It has been going on for a long time. And Dr. Sam, what I point out in the book is that the international corporations, the multinational corporations, are happy to have all of our manufacturing go to China. That the goal here is money and control over people. China, international trade was never predicated on the competitive advantage of a country like China, being that it could subsidize its currency and use slaves. Multinational corporations have wanted to use slaves from the beginning of history. We fought a civil war, and one of the issues in that civil war was whether or not slaves could be used in the southern economy. And what we established was it was immoral, and it was wrong, and it was also bad business. But the international corporations and the allowed to pursue in the profit alone. I mean, take a look at the photographs of Jacob Riis, turn of the century, the sweatshops of children and women working and inhuman conditions, long hours, virtually no pay. Whenever unbridled profit is allowed to be pursued, the corporations head towards slaves. And now, it's unconscionable that for the benefit of cheap, high-definition TVs at Walmart and Kmart and all the other marts, that we're allowing our multinational corporations to send all of our manufacturing jobs to China for using the slaves and establishing their profits there. I point out in the book that China now has $1 trillion of foreign exchange reserves. That's more than any country ever in the history of the world has gotten. 80% of it is in dollar holdings. We've virtually mortgaged the United States to China with our trade deficits. And these ports we're opening to reconfigure in Mexico to bring the containers from China up into the United States cheaply. El Lazaro, Cardenas, Manzanilla, both ends of the Panama Canal, they're operated by Hutchison Whampoa, which is a communist Chinese port operating company that ought to scare all Americans, just like Dubai ports did. In terms of security, nobody's going to look in these containers. You know, again, for cost, we're going to let the communist Chinese manage the ports that are the port of entry for billions of containers from China into the United States. And then NASCO, this North American Super Corridor Coalition, has got a program going on with Lockheed Martin and Hutchison Whampoa, communist Chinese company, to put RFID, radio frequency identification sensors, all up and down Interstate 35, and they'll be able to track in China where our containers are coming into the United States through this NAFTA superhighway. I mean, when China gets around to sending gunboats up the Mississippi River, who's going to stop them under the PPP of the Bush administration, the public-private partnerships? China will probably be leasing the Mississippi River for 99 years.
And, of course, what people really don't understand is that there has been a small group of very wicked people in America who have financed world communism since its inception. If you doubt that, you need to get my March, April, May, and June newsletters. They're available at RadioLiberty.com. Read them and understand who financed Russia, who financed communist China. And, of course, you have to ask yourself, are our leaders stupid? No, they're not stupid. They're very, very clever, perhaps diabolical. That is because they have a different worldview. Well, let's go. Is this Sylvia in Las Vegas?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Sylvia. How are you?
So nice to talk to you, Dr. Stan. Yep. And Mr. Corsi. I listen to you all the time.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. He was talking about the I-35. Tonight there was collapse of the bridge in Minnesota.
I saw this. Yes, I've been watching it on the news tonight.
Would this be an
No, I don't. I think this really has nothing to do with the NAFTA superhighway.
I think it's unrelated, but it shows again. You know, our transportation infrastructure does always need work, but we don't have to go to foreign countries like Sintra and Spain to get it done.
Yes, it was just so curious that this seemed to happen, you know.
It caught my attention too.
And the thing is that we actually have a great deal of money. It's of course in the transportation fund. There are our trust funds. This is what the federal tax money, gasoline tax money, is supposed to be sent for, and the government steals that money and funnels it off into their favorite projects. For instance, up in Canada, pardon me, up in Alaska, where they're building the bridge to nowhere. They're going to spend $250 million to build a bridge to an island that has about 40 people on it. You could buy everybody there on the island a commercial jet for the cost of that bridge. And of course, it just happens to be because I think it's either the senator or the congressman from Alaska, their family has property on the island. This is how the system works, Sylvia. Keeping up our infrastructure. Why, of course, we have in Washington, D.C., the most corrupt politicians. Little wonder their popularity among the American people is only 12%.
I agree with you, and I can't understand why the people don't stand up and do something.
We're going to have to get them to listen to our programs. Thanks very much.
Oh, I talk about you all the time.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Sylvia.
God bless you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Jeff, who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. It's actually Jack, but...
This is Jack from Michigan. Okay, go ahead.
Jeff is a fine name, too.
All right, fine.
in January of 76, the 19th of January, Congress people were invited by the World Affairs Council of Philadelphia to sign on to the Declaration of Interdependence because they said that international organizations needed to regulate the economies of the world, and national sovereignty needed to, it was an outdated concept or reality, and they even came out and said that a new world order was necessary.
Right, and they've been planning on this for a long time, and a lot of our leaders know it. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I do. Okay, and I was leading to that, because in 1933, FDR, by executive order, suspended the gold standard and initiated emergency banking acts. And then in 1973, the Senate, U.S. Senate, did some report on Emergency Powers Acts that continued the Emergency Banking Act. And Henry Gonzalez, I was wondering if Dr. Corsi knew that Henry Gonzalez, the chairman of the House Banking Committee in May of 92, as well as another congressman, cited the fact that the United States government is in receivership, and if they're insolvent and in receivership to foreign entities,
okay, thanks so very
much. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, do you have any thoughts at all about that, DeForest?
Well, Dr. Chen, I point out in the book, and I argue at great length, that when you take a look at the collapse of the dollar, which is being engineered, and the Amero, which is waiting as our currency, our North American currency, to solve the problem, you've got to look at, for instance, the gap accounting, the general accepted accounting practices, accounting is done by the Department of Treasury of our federal deficit every year. And when you take into account the Medicare and Social Security current obligations, future obligations that we're currently creating today, and you account for those, our deficit in 2006 is more like $4.6 trillion. And the accumulated negative net worth of the United States is $53 trillion. Now, there's no way these future Social Security obligations are going to get paid unless we do what they call monetizing the currency. And monetizing the currency means, devaluing it, either printing more money or just devaluing the currency. So you'll get your Social Security check, but you won't be able to buy very much with it. And this kind of crises, these kinds of, the dollar's lost tremendously against the euro. The euro is hitting all-time record highs against the dollar. Anybody who's gone to Europe recently knows how little the dollar buys. And this is, again, the kind of crisis where the dollar could collapse. And in resetting the value of the dollar, all these future obligations which can't be met will be monetized or basically made to be worthless when they're paid.
And I think that this is exactly what the plan is. In fact, we have an article written by the former assistant chief of the Russian military, saying exactly that. He believes that this is why we're going to be involved with the war with Iran, so we can precipitate a crisis, so that we can simply renounce our international debt obligations, and not only, of course, leave people throughout the world who are holding dollars with worthless currencies, but do the same thing for our own citizens. And I think he's not too far off the track. And, of course, what better way to then force us into either a North American community or a global currency? Because if you're going to have a world government, you're going to have eventually a world currency. And I believe this is what's planned, and I share your concerns.
Well, Dr. Chen, the Council on Foreign Relations is getting now more bold in their last two issues. Now, 2 issues ago, they had Ben Steele, one of their top economic staff members, write an article saying the global currency was coming, that monetary currencies issued by nation states he declared to be obsolete. And it was the precursor for saying that first we need to go into regional currencies, that would argue for the Amero, and then down the road his arguments for a global currency. And that was published. That's out in the open now for the Council on Foreign Relations. And if they're already talking in the open about creating a global currency, if we've got the articles which I cite in the book extensively, the economists who are working on the Amero, who've named the Amero, I think the plan is well along the way for a regional currency which will be created as part of this North American Union.
In fact, that article you're referring to, I think, is so important. I would hope every one of our listeners would get it. And there, of course, one of the solutions put forward is a new international gold-backed currency issued by a private concern. In other words, what he's talking about is a privately owned central bank, an international currency, which is gold-backed, because they know you have to have something behind the currency. That's why they're inflating away as rapidly as they can the value of everything that most people have that's tied to the dollar. Our guest has been Dr. Jerome Kersey. We'll be back. Kersey will be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jim has been waiting patiently. Jim, do you have a quick question? We're just about out of time.
Yes, sir. This is about your previous book, Dr. Kersey on Iran. I was curious if you had read Pat Buchanan's article a couple of weeks ago called Gulf of Tonkin 2 and the Guns of August and what your thoughts might be.
Well, I have read that, and I've been writing with great alarm that we now have three carrier groups parked off of Iran, and I'm very concerned that any incident that occurs will be used by the Bush administration as a reason to launch a preemptive war against Iran. I think it would be a disaster. I've been writing since 2004, really, to say we should not go to war with Iran. It would be the worst thing we could do. But the Bush administration has failed in diplomacy. They've run out of creative ideas. They've got Secretary Rice again over in the Middle East trying to convince Israel to give away the West Bank to Hamas, while Iran is funding Hamas in the Gaza Strip and funding Hezbollah and rearming Hezbollah. The Middle East is right now a tinderbox, and we're pushing more war. An expanded war is the problem in the Middle East. It'll never be the solution.
And because war is the means by which we lose our freedom at home, and every time we send our boys overseas to fight for freedom, we lose more freedom at home. Thanks so much for calling, Jim. And of course, I want to thank you specifically, Dr. Kersey, for being with us again this evening. And Dr. Kersey's book is The Late Great USA, and we certainly want to encourage people to get that. Do you have a parting thought before we let you go?
Well, Dr. Stan, it's a great honor to be with you, and I've written this book to give people, you know, if you take a look at the footnotes, you can see the original documentation yourself. If you look at the documentation, you'll know the claims the book makes are true, and you can get it to your congressmen and senators so that they can't just say, oh, don't worry, this is just for our competitiveness, we're having discussions with our neighbors. Show your congressmen the documents and demand they give you honest answers to real questions. And Dr. Stan, thank you very much for carrying the book. I'm greatly honored that you will do so.
Well, I'm looking forward to, Kersey, getting this book out as far and wide as we can. We need people to understand that America is under attack today not by Osama bin Laden and not by Islamic terrorists. Our nation is under attack today by globalists who have sworn an oath to uphold our Constitution and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that they themselves are the very enemies of our Constitution that are intent upon destroying it. Thanks so very much. We'll look forward to having you with us again in the very near future.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless. And
you too.
I appreciate the opportunity to be with you tonight.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's always a pleasure to have Dr. Jerome Kersey with us. And let me mention, if you'd like to order the book, we don't have the exact price, but you can put the order in. We'll give you a call and let you know what it is. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get some of the interviews we have with Dr. Kersey. We can certainly get you copies of this interview and other interviews, either on tape or on CD. You need to have this material to understand that there is an agenda There are people who want to destroy America. Now, this, of course, goes along with my talk. And if you haven't seen it, well, you need to get either the DVD or video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and or the book that goes with it, and then my talk on The Forbidden Secret, and the syllabus that goes with that, that will introduce you to the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm that President Bush referred to on two occasions in his first inaugural address. The angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. And then, of course, you'll certainly want to get the DVDs for the excellent, very, very professionally done documentary DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, and those are done by Chris Pinto. And then we have a talk that Chris Pinto gave at our last conference. It's called The Atlantis Connection. Well, you may wonder what Atlantis has to do with it. It has everything to do with it. There are people within secret societies that have always looked upon America as the new Atlantis. We were to become the new Atlantis and reconstitute that wonderful and ideal society that existed before the Great Flood destroyed Atlantis. And then, of course, you want to get the DVD and or the four-tape set with Constance Cumby, four-tape set, but, of course, the DVD where she tells about her experience of researching the New Age and about the plan for the coming world leader. And, of course, the DVD is called The Emergence. The Emergence. What's emerging by the new world leader who is waiting in the wings to come aboard to take control of the earth and, of course, to do, well, some terrible, terrible things, because this is a terrible, terrible being. Not a human being. It is simply a being. Well, and then, of course, we do hope you want to get our four-tape set on the supernatural, our four-tape set on Satanism and deliverance, our book written by William H. Kennedy on satanic crimes, or certainly Father Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil. You need to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can actually listen to our programs there live 3 hours a day, or you can listen to the archived or MP3 programs. There's a segment there that has all sorts of DVDs on it, of videos. You can see those free of charge. Encourage others to go. Your job out there is to become an educator, to help us educate the American people. And certainly people, if they have access to the Internet, can go to Dr. Corsi's website and pull down his articles, get his book, and help us to get the information out. Dr. Corsi is doing a great job getting the information together, and we need your help to help get it out. Well, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And our certainly our website, RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, we would hope that many of you are beginning to make preparations for the very real difficult times that lie ahead. And if you'd be interested in an emergency food catalog or in a health products catalog or just a regular catalog or a newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And so we'll be back here in just a moment or two with the next hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, this second hour, we're going to have Dr. Greg Steinberg here with us, and we're going to be talking about some of the problems that we see with so many of the prominent people, celebrities, getting into trouble. And Dr. Steinberg, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me tonight.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, your background, and of course, the things that really are on your heart tonight.
Well, I'm a professor at Austin Peay State University of Sports Psychology. And basically, I work with athletes in terms of their mental game. And tonight, I'm talking about the book that I just have written that's coming out this week called Flying Lessons, 102 Strategies to Equip Your Child to Soar into Life with Confidence and Competence.
Well,
and basically, it is a parent guide to teach success strategies.
Well, I think that's great. You know, of course, we see so many people with very prominent people, certainly within the sports field. We're getting into all sorts of problems today, and we see them compromising principles. And certainly this is one of the great tragedies of today, is that people who become icons for our young people are so corrupt morally.
Well, yeah, I think there is a lot of good role models out there as well as a lot of bad role models. I think what we have to do as parents and as teachers is explain that a lot of these icons that we have, these superheroes, are really, that's just their profession. So an athlete, for example, his profession is just to play professional baseball or professional football, yet we put him on this pedestal as a superhero, as a superhuman. Yet they're not. They have human frailties like everybody else. They make poor decisions. And so the lesson that is valuable with all the scandalous behavior is to explain that, you know, these people, this is their profession. This is what they do for a living. Maybe they shouldn't be considered as superheroes.
I think there's probably a lot to say about that. We've seen recently this episode in the NBA where one of the referees, the man who's supposed to make sure the game is played honestly, is betting and waging on many of the games he's officiating at. And, of course, the referee can many times actually determine who's going to win the game. And I've certainly seen this in football games where, in fact, I remember Mike Colquhoun, one of the Super Bowls, mentioning it was one thing, of course, to play the opposite team, but when you had all the fellas with stripes there against you as well, it was pretty hard to win the Super Bowl. And certainly I can remember certain of the plays there that were called. There were obviously the referees were simply lying about their calls. And I think Mike Colquhoun understood that. But then what do? They call you a bad loser when you lose. Well, we need a really moral people. You can't have a society unless you have moral people there. How are we going to bring, again, morality back into America?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, of course, right? I think it really starts with the parents in terms of teaching integrity and morality with their kids. The first step, of course, is modeling that behavior yourself, modeling integrity, modeling high moral standards as a parent, and then let the children observe that. And of course, there's also lessons that parents can teach in terms of integrity and morals with their kids.
Hold that thought.
To sport, one of the things about integrity is, you know, if you have to win at all costs, if the parents are emphasizing win at all costs, then it's hard to have integrity. I think the secret is either it's important to win, but it's also important to enjoy the thrill of competition. I know Joe Paterno, the famous football coach, has said that winning without integrity is like eating an unseasoned dish. It doesn't taste very well, and it won't fill you up. So I think those kind of lessons are what we have to teach our children.
But, of course, we see so many of our athletes today doping themselves using using steroid compounds. It seems to be this is almost standard fare in the various bicycle races, the Tour de France, and we've had a number of instances where this has either been charged or proven that these athletes are using steroids so they can get better performance and they can win the yellow jersey or whatever it would be with all the accolades to go along with that. So, and then we pay our senior athletes so well. And if you're the winner, it maybe only be by a fraction of a second, but if the steroids can give you that little edge, look at all the goodies you're going to get in return for cheating. So it's pretty hard simply sometimes, I think, to convince children that winning is not important.
Well, I don't deny that. I think winning is important. I think we should emphasize winning. The line is that, winning at all costs. I think if you lie, if you cheat, if you steal, you can get your way. I think it might come back and bite you like it does, like it did with Michael Vick, like it actually has done with Barry Bonds. Look, he's going to break the home run record any day now, yet it's a tainted record, and everybody believes it's a tainted record. And that's actually a great lesson because it shows you, well, look, you might have this great record, but everybody believes it's no big deal because you tainted it with by using performance-enhancing drugs. So that shows kids that if they somehow cheat, then the record that they're trying to strive for, the goals they're trying to strive for, are going to be spoiled.
And I think that's really very, very true. We often think of Pete Rose, really, the baseball great. And yet, because he was a cheat, he was actually betting and wagering on the games he was playing in, which, of course, is not, you're not supposed to do that. He's been totally discredited. And what was really a great baseball player is now really a nobody, subject of derision. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Dr. Greg Steinberg, who's a professor, dealing with the athletes, but he's written a book. What is the title of your book, Greg?
The title is called Flying Lessons, 122 Strategies to Equip Your Child to Soar into Life with Confidence and Confidence. And the listeners can actually get excerpts from the book and information about sports psychology on the website, which is myflyinglessons.com.
All right. Well, you want to talk about your book, or what would you like to? How would you like to develop these ideas?
Yeah, sure. We could talk about the book. That's why, hopefully, I'm on the radio show to talk about the scandalous behaviors and the book. The book is a virtual toolbox for parents. It really teaches parents how to teach success strategies to their kids. It talks about teaching emotional toughness. The book is organized really about emotional fitness and emotional toughness, because I think emotions are key to success, and I've organized the book into six emotional keys. That's basically how the book is organized, and then I have 50 chapters in those as they relate to the six emotional keys, and each chapter teaches a concept to the parent. It usually tells a story about a famous person, be it in music, could be in science as well as sport. And then what I do is I give the parents tools to apply those success strategies. And it shows, not only is it entertaining, because stories really go to the heart. And when you teach, you want to teach by stories. But also I have strategies to apply those stories to their children.
All right, fine. Well, of course, it's so important that children are brought up in the way that they should be, so they will, of course, have a successful life. And this is really dependent upon the parent. what part do you think that morality plays? And then, of course, what are we going to base our morality on when we're teaching it to children?
Well, teaching morality and integrity is quite hard. Actually, I have a drill about this in the book, and I talk about the parent should take out a straw and cut it into three parts and then tape it up. And the straw is not going to work because air will get into it. And I really say, just like a straw that cannot be divided against itself, integrity, a person of integrity, cannot be divided against itself, in that we have to be a person of integrity in all situations. We can't have integrity in the classroom, yet cheat on the playing ground and lie to our friends. Or conversely, we can't play fair on the playing grounds, yet cheat and lie to our friends, and then play fair, let's say, in the classroom. But we need to be a person of integrity in all situations. And I think the exercise that I talk about in the book kind of will illustrate that point.
I see. Well, Chris, but does it work? I mean, will the child really, be a moral individual? Since our schools today, specifically, will not allow teaching specifically of morality, and we teach our children through values clarification, that they have to determine what's right and wrong because there are no fixed values. So how can we teach our children any morality when the schools are teaching them that they will determine what's right and wrong, that there are no eternal values? It seems to me that our children are really being cheated out of some of the important lessons of life, that there really are values, and if you don't abide by them, there are going to be consequences.
Well, I think if you look at morality, if you look at the morality stories, we could look at famous athletes for that. In terms of the good stories, if you look at, for example, Tiger Woods, he's the most famous athlete in the world, yet he does a lot of good moral things for the world. He has developed a foundation in Los Angeles called the Tiger Woods Foundation, which is a school that teaches physics and art as well as a little golf. And he said he wants to be known much more for things outside golf than golf itself. So we can teach morality and purpose and meaning through stories, through illustrations of famous people like Tiger Woods.
All right, fine. So what are some of the other issues that you deal with in your book?
Some of the other messages? Well, one, I would say public enemy number one that children have to deal with is pressure and anxiety. And the secret is how can they overcome pressure and anxiety? Well, one story, or one, I should say, tool that I talk about in the book is develop a failing forward notebook. I think people are so afraid of failing, they're afraid of looking foolish, that they cannot have the freedom to do what they want, to kind of take the risk. And I think if we overcome this fear, then we allow ourselves to take these risks and really succeed, because every success has 200 or 1,000 failures behind it. And the idea here is that we want to overcome our fear of failure. And so what I do in this story and in this toolbox about this story is talk about developing a failing forward notebook, where every time you fail, you write down what you learned from those failures, and then you progress from that. And the idea is you stop being afraid of failing. You actually see failure as a positive, and then when you do that, you're less likely to make mistakes.
All right, fine. Now, are these tried, true things that you've actually had children practice in the past and have been effective?
Yeah, all the clients that I work with, and many of my clients are young athletes, I have them do this. I have them develop a failing forward notebook, write down five of the mistakes they've made and what they learned from that. And we usually discuss those mistakes, because we're all going to make mistakes on the playing field or wherever it might be. And the secret is, how can we learn from that so we don't make the same mistakes? But ultimately, when we are less fearful of making mistakes, then we make less mistakes. It's kind of a catch-22.
Well, of course, we've seen this last couple of weeks, Michael Vick, the quarterback you know, Sydney being discredited, and here's a man who already one of the country's leading quarterbacks. He's a senator. They were selling his T-shirts, you know, his jerseys with his number on them, his name on them. Sydney, Nike and several of the other shoe manufacturers had contracts for him, and he was just sitting on top of the world, a $5 million a year contract, and then he gets involved in interstate fighting, you know, going to have these dogs, you know, fighting and killing one another, and suddenly he's totally discredited, and he's of course going to lose his endorsements. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars of endorsements, and he's been asked not to show up for his in training camp. I mean, here's a man who probably has very little capability outside of his being an excellent athlete, who stands to lose everything simply because he's an immoral individual. What's your response to something like that?
Well, how I respond to that is it's hard to know what led him to those decisions, whether he had friends to coerce him or convince him that the dog fighting training was appropriate. It's hard to know. I don't know. No, none of us know what the history behind it in terms of the background. I think it might come out in the next few weeks or months in terms of why he chose that path. It's really hard to know, but it leads us back to that the people that we look up to, the people that our children look up to, maybe we need to start doubting that, because they're just professional athletes. They're doing something because that's their profession. And I think the media pushes us, pushes society, pushes children to look up to these people as superheroes. I think what we need to do is start looking towards scientists and politicians and other people for to look up to. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with the charisma of the politicians, the charisma of our scientists, and I think also it has to do with the media pushing that in the forefront of our social consciousness.
Well, do you really believe that we can look up to our politicians? Certainly the politicians today in Congress, why they've got about, I think, a 12% approval rating. Is that the sort of the icon, the sort of hero, the sort of symbol that we want our children to emulate? Are the politicians in Washington, D.C., Bill Clinton?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of politicians you might think are corrupt, but I think there's going to be a lot of politicians who are very moral, and they're doing it for public service. Most of the politicians, of course, have made a lot of money in the private sector, whether it was being a lawyer or inheriting wealth. But I think now they're looking towards giving back. I think if we give a lot of the politicians benefit of the doubt, we're going to find a lot of good out there. And I think what the media has to do is have to push other icons. And I'm not, you know, politicians is one aspect, but, you know, if we look at scientists, you know, we had the charismatic Albert Einstein a long time ago, who's now an icon of science. We need scientists like that, so our young people can look up to scientists, and that's just as important.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest this evening is Greg Steinberg, and he's written a book about how to train our children. And so how are you going to get them to begin to focus on, say, the scientists as role models for their lives? Do you have a technique of doing that, or is it going to get them to read about them?
Well, I don't have a technique, but I think it's about telling stories. It's about alluding to what they did and how they did it, and you know, interesting stories. I think if we know more stories about our scientists, about our artists, about the writers. One story I tell in the book is about Mark Twain, how every night he would tell a different story using the same pieces on his fireplace mantle, and basically it was just showing his creative genius. So every night,
hold on, I'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Greg, go right ahead, pick this story up. He was talking about Mark Twain and how he would tell a different story every night, but using about the same characters.
Well, he had objects on his mantle, and he would use he would create a different story every night using the same pieces, and it just shows you his creative genius. And so there's a lot of stories out there like that which we could tell to our children to emphasize some of these people in terms of their own genius.
All right, fine. And so, Sidney, you believe that storytelling then is an excellent way to impart values to the children?
Well, there's an ancient proverb that says, tell me a fact and I'll learn, tell me the truth and I'll believe, but tell me a story and it'll live in my heart forever. And I think when you tell stories, that's the best way to really teach lessons. And so in my book, what I do is I tell stories at the start of every chapter, whether it's about an athlete or a politician or an artist or a scientist. And so I think it's real important to tell stories about famous people because we learn from stories.
All right, fine. And so do you then have the stories there that you suggest that the parent utilizes?
The stories are there for the parent to basically read to the child. One of my favorite stories actually is about Paul McCartney. And Paul McCartney, of course, is from the Beatles, and he had many highs and lows in his life. And the story I tell is about a low he was having in 1968 after he did the White Album and all the other Beatles were out of the country and he wasn't feeling so good about himself. And he was out clubbing and just feeling depressed. And actually, I got this story from him in his own words. And he said one night he had a dream about his mother, Mary, who came to him, very comforting dream. And all she said to him were three words, let it be. And then he woke up that morning feeling all good, knowing things are gonna get better. And he went over to the piano and he wrote the famous lyrics, when I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me speaking words of wisdom, let it be. I think that's a great story to share to people, to show that even great musicians, very famous people, very talented, very successful people have times of low, and that we all go through highs and lows. And so to teach us to tell a story to that to a child shows him or her that we all go through highs and lows, and when that child's going through a low, it shows that they're not alone.
Or would you like then to tell us some more of the stories that you share in the book?
You want me to tell you a couple other stories?
Yeah, sure. So the people would know sort of things that they would get out of the book, it sounds, as they were to get this for their child.
Well, let me tell you a drill that I like. Another drill, I think, because that's very valuable as well. And it has to do with vision and awareness. One of the emotional strengths that I talk about is emotional awareness. And that comes with vision. And actually, the story I start with is with Yogi Berra. I don't know if you remember Yogi Berra, but he's that famous Yankee catcher that has all these yogiisms. You know, one of them he said was, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. But the story I tell, to start off his chapter, is he's driving to training camp.
I'm going to ask you to just hold that and we'll... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Gregg's book is laid out in such a way that there will be stories of ideas that you can read to your children, and he was telling us a few of the stories. One of them deals with Yogi Berra. Of course, you remember Yogi. He had all of these wonderful, wonderful sayings that many of them have become part of our way of life. So tell us the story here about Yogi.
So Yogi was driving with his wife from New York to spring training in Vero Beach, not Vero Beach, but in Florida, and his wife fell asleep, and all of a sudden she wakes up and the car's shaking because they're on a dirt road, and she says, Yogi, I think we're lost. And Yogi turns to her, yeah, but we're making great time. And so the idea here is you might get somewhere
fast, but it might not be the somewhere you want to be. And so you have to have a direction. You have to have a vision. And one of the drills that I talk about in the book is I tell a parent, it's really hard to guide your child to whether it's a college career or maybe it is a, college major, or it is a career for life. And so one of the things I do is talk about a drill that talks about vision, creating vision, and I tell the parent to do three things. One is tell their child to write a list of their strengths, and then write a list of their values, what they value, and then also write a purpose statement. So you have a list of your strengths, a list of your values, the child's values, and then a purpose statement that the child believes is their purpose in life. And then what they need to do is pick, let's say, a career, whether it's teaching or physics, being a physicist, or maybe being a doctor. And they have to write a persuasive paragraph explaining how their strengths and their values and their purpose statement fits that career choice. And if it's an easy fit, if they can write the paragraph very easily with everything fitting very neatly, then that's the right career choice. But if it doesn't fit neatly, if it's kind of, you have to kind of push it and pull it to fit within your strengths and values, then that's a red flag. So that's kind of an easy tool to kind of guide the parent in terms of guiding their own children down the right path.
Well, how would you know what necessary path you'd want to guide them down? Whether did you make the decision whether they would go into a profession or a trade? Or I believe every young person needs some means of making a living rather than simply going out into the general labor market. How would a parent know what to do or how to go about guiding the child into what field?
Well, like I mentioned just a minute ago, you guide them because you take their strengths, their values, and their purpose statement, and you have them pick. You don't pick for them. The parent doesn't pick for them. They pick your career, and then they write the persuasive paragraph. If they can write it very easily, then they know that's the right choice.
Okay, so the child then sort of writes a statement, and if it comes easily, then that's really where they should direct their future?
Yeah, it's a possibility, of course. It's a possible career choice. But it's basically an easy way to make sure that these are one of the right career choices.
All right, fine. Well, now, do you have any other interesting stories that you utilize to help the child as they're actually advancing in their life and to learn how to make the proper choices for themselves?
Well, another story I tell is actually with John F. Kennedy, when he had a lot of trouble with Germany and Cuba and all the other countries. And the idea was that the media could ask him any question they wanted to, and basically almost have a surprise attack on him with Cuba and all the things that were going on in the 60s and the Cold War. And the idea here was that he, to counter that surprise attack, what he would do with his staff was prepare him for any questions that could be thrown to him, bad and good. And so once he was prepared, he was ready for, he had a right response for all the questions the media could ask him, almost as a surprise attack. And the drill I talk about with children is to develop an adversity plan. An adversity plan basically is make a list of 5 or 10 things that, in terms of bad things that can happen to you on the golf course, or maybe during a test, maybe giving a speech, at class, or maybe it's doing a recital in the orchestra, whatever it might be, list 5 to 10 bad things that can happen, and then write corresponding responses, positive responses to those bad things. And then what you want to do is either image those responses or actually play out those responses so that when those bad things do happen, because they're always going to happen, you're always going to have a few bad things happen to you during competition,
hold
during
that
a recital,
right. Hold that thought, we'll be right back.
You're ready for those positive responses.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Greg Steinberger. We're talking about a book he's written, and we'll tell you in just a few minutes the title of the book and let you know where you can learn more about that. But for the time being, we're just getting some ideas of the content of the book, and it's really sort of a parent's guide for the child as to how the parent would guide a child into proper activities growing up, into proper values growing up. And of course, do you think that the parent is at all, a supplement to the schools? Do you think he has to counter the influence many times that the child is getting in the schools? Greg? Oh, I think we've lost our guest. I'm going to ask if our producer will go ahead and get Greg back on the line. If Sydney Ehrman, would you mind getting Dr. Steinberg back on the line? We seem to have lost him at this point. So if you would call Greg Steinberg for us so we can get him back on the line. But of course, this is a book that was written, my estimation. Herman, would you mind getting Greg Steinberg back on the line? We've lost our guest. I'm not sure what Herman's doing at the present time. Anyway, we'll try to get him back on here very, very shortly. Under any circumstances, I think that it's raising a child today is very, very difficult because of the influence of the schools. And we're going to give you a little music for the time being, and we're going to go ahead and see if we can get our guest on. Dr. Stan, we have Greg Steinberg back on the line, and of course, what's the title of the book, and how would people get in touch with it? Do I get a copy of it, or do you have a web page?
122 strategies to equip your child to soar into life with confidence and confidence. And again, it's for parents to teach them how to teach success strategies to their children. And people can get it at any bookstore throughout the country, and they can go to my website, which is www.myflyinglessons.com, where they can see excerpts from the book, as well as other stuff about success strategies and sports psychology.
All right, now, do you think it is, Sydney, difficult for parents to raise children today, especially with the way things are in school? Is there, Sydney, the parent, is he supplementing the school? Is he countering what's in the school? What's the relationship between the parent and the public educational program where the child is going to spend so much of their time growing up? Because as we see what's happening to our children today, so many of them seem to be so lost and to have already sort of a real problem with permanent values and certainly adaption to society. So many of our young people are into drugs. So many of our young people are into rock music. So many of our young people seem to have lost the moral compass. We find today that in the United States, we have over 7 million people in prison, probation, or parole. That's almost 2% of our population. Those are frightening figures. Somewhere we're going wrong. Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Go ahead. I just want to get your thoughts.
I think the the idea is that if parents implement appropriate modeling techniques, so if they illustrate to their children moral and ethical behaviors, they're more likely to engage in moral and ethical behaviors the children are themselves. And I think that what happens is that the parents a lot of times do not do that, and more so than not, that they're allowing their children kind of free rein. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think what children have to have is more structure after school. We know that children are more likely to do drugs and engage in illegal behavior when there's not enough structure. So I think parents have to take the lead, not only through their own behaviors, but also create a highly structured environment for the children, whether it's put them in some sport activities or recreational activities or art activities, whatever it is, create some structure for them to actually not only do and occupy their time, but to gain self-esteem from these activities.
What do you think athletics plays an important part in developing the character of our children?
Well, we know that people that have played sport early in life and throughout their life are more successful. And I think the reason is that sport teaches great values in the sense that it teaches discipline, it teaches hard work, it teaches how to work with others, it teaches racial tolerance, it teaches so many great values that translate and transfer to the business world into areas later in life.
All right, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for our guest, Dr. Greg Steinberg. And, of course, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're talking about, of course, really this idea that Dr. Steinberg has written a book to help parents raise their children in using different techniques and, of course, this concept of stories to begin to frame the child's world so that they will be able then to adjust and to be successful. Do you have any sort of long-term follow-up on these techniques that you're using? Have they been successful in the rearing of children through the years?
Well, anecdotally, I just have my own recording of the strategies that I've used. All the strategies in the book I've used with children, my clients. I've had an enormous amount of young clients that I work with, and all these strategies I have implemented with them. And so, anecdotally, we would say it works. There's no, I would say, research background for the book, because that's usually not done. But a lot of the book is based in research, so the techniques are based in research, and I do tell some research in the book as well, but I try to make it more general public friendly. It's not a textbook. It's a book for parents just to learn about performance strategies and how to apply those strategies.
I know you actually then have a number of clients, a number of families or children that where the families bring them to you to try to help the child. Is that it? Are you basically a psychologist, a psychiatrist?
Yeah, well, I'm a professor
of
sports psychology, as we mentioned earlier, and then I have a side practice where I have usually parents come to me, and they have a 14, 15, 16-year-old boy or girl, and they're struggling with either tennis or golf or baseball, and then I sit down with them, and I help them and guide them through some issues that they're having. Usually it's performance enhancement issues relating to anxiety, confidence, or concentration, and then we work through these problems. And I give them strategies, basically might even say homework, to work through these problems, and then we see how it's working, and we kind of move them in the right direction.
Uh, Let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I was. At first, I wanted to commend him in his endeavors with his techniques, and I asked him two questions. As I suspect from insight that his techniques would be infinitely superior to drugging kids with Ritalin and other psychotropic drugs.
All right, well, let's ask him then. How do you feel, Greg, about using Ritalin and other psychotropic drugs on these children? So many of our children are being put on drugs by their teachers in schools today. How do you feel about that?
Well, let me first thank Jack for his compliment. And in regards to that, yeah, I think Ritalin, the problem with Ritalin is it's the easy way out. And when children are acting up in school in terms of their concentration problems or they're fidgeting and acting out, teachers will say, well, I think this kid is ADHD and we need to give him drugs. And it might be the case, but the problem is when we do that, the kids become dependent on the drugs to concentrate better. I think the first step is always to teach them strategies, success strategies, to allow them gain control over their own concentration. So it really empowers them. One example that I give is you have to have a trigger word like be here now or something that pulls their concentration back. And so when they find that their concentration is wavering in school or at home, they have this trigger word, such as be here now, and it pulls their concentration back to the moment. And I think that's, for instance, just as an instance, an example of a training tool to teach our kids to concentrate. Because if their mind is wandering in class and if their mind is wandering at home, it's going to be really hard for them to focus when they need to focus. So we have to give them training tools, success strategies, to help them work on their concentration.
All right, fine. And Jack, did you have another question for our guest?
Yeah, this is kind of a segue. There is music technology. I'm just happening to see the Simonis therapeutic sound technology from Germany. It says particular music compositions and instrumentation have proven excellent tools for overcoming physical, emotional, and cognitive challenges. And I was wondering if you ever have had the opportunity to evaluate anything like that as a complement to his strategies.
Are you acquainted at all with the use of music therapy with children?
Well, I don't typically do that. But, you know, of course, music, what it does is it puts the child at ease in terms of creating the right brain waves, the right emotional state. What I do, perhaps maybe similar, is I teach children when they're having anxiety problems how to meditate. And when they learn to meditate, which is really creating the right brain waves, you might say, in terms of creating a peaceful state, just like music would, and it's easy to teach kids to meditate, then what they do is when they have these anxiety problems, whether it's in the classroom or on the playing field, they can go back to their meditation. And of course, meditation has a lot to do with breathing, and I teach them to use a mantra, like a word such as calm or cool, and as they're breathing, they say their mantra, and now that word gets associated with that calm state, and when they have these anxiety problems on the playing field or wherever it might be, they say their mantra and they do their breathing, and they find that calm state.
All right.
So I think there's a lot of relationship with music.
All right, fine. Do you have any other thoughts, Jack?
Well, he mentioned Be Here Now, and believe it or not, I know Dr. Stan, George Harrison from the Beatles, he did an album called Living in the Material World. Well, in there, he has a composition called Be Here Now, and it really identifies in the lyrics what your guest has been describing.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much, Jack. Okay, fine. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, our guest is Greg Steinberg. And again, the title of your book, Greg?
It's called Flying Lessons, 122 Strategies to Equip Your Child to Soar into Life with Confidence and Confidence. And again, it's a book that teaches success strategies for parents to teach success strategies to their children. It helps parents teach mental and emotional toughness so they can be successful. But going back to Jack's comment, just one quick comment is, Be Here Now is a famous book from the 60s, and it was written by Ramnath Das, and it was a bestseller, and I think that's where George Harrison probably got the title of that story from.
Well, because there are certainly different approaches to the problems we face, and some people would follow one path, other people would feel that that might be counterproductive. Be that as it may, we certainly want to get your thoughts on how you counsel the children, and so how do they do after you've got them into meditation on the breathing exercise? What you're really describing is sort of like yoga, isn't it?
Well, yeah, yoga is very similar. But basically, when I have clients that are struggling with their anxiety, struggling with their inability to deal with pressure, and I teach them to meditate, and I teach them a mantra, almost every one of them says how well it works and how well it reduces anxiety because they've never done it before. Once they learn to do it, and they do it a lot, then it works really well. And so they really enjoy it, actually.
All right, fine. Well, Krishna, these techniques are aimed at trying to teach the child how to adapt to society. There are lots of problems out there for young people. We live in a very complicated world, and simply the world we're living in is changing very dramatically. And the world I was raised in 50 years ago really doesn't exist today. And that's a tragedy, because in many ways it was a much better world. Now, what age would you suggest starting these programs with? In other words, what age would the child be when you start these programs?
Well, most of my clients are usually 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. They're usually struggling. They're talented young athletes. They're struggling with something, and then the parents seek me out. But I think success strategies, teaching children how to be more emotionally fit and emotionally strong, can really happen at any age, because I think if you watch young, very, very young athletes, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, they still have anxiety and they still feel the pressure. So if you teach them how to deal with the pressure, they're going to be more successful. I think you just have to keep it simple. Like for a 6 or 7 year old, all you have to do is teach them to breathe and make sure they're taking deep breaths. Maybe if they're, let's say they're playing t-ball or something, and you basically have to acknowledge that they're probably going to be nervous, number one, and that it's okay to be nervous, but also just to tell them to focus on breathing, keep it very simple. And I think that will actually translate and transfer to later in life when they feel more nervous as they progress up the sporting ladder.
All right, so what you're really doing then is teaching these various techniques that they can use in later life to deal with stress and then deal with the problems of living. Is that it?
Yeah, the book is not about sport at all, and it's not meant to be about sport, because I tell a lot of stories, like I said, about Albert Einstein and Mark Twain and Paul McCartney and John F. Kennedy, but I also tell stories about Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan and Mia Hamm. But the idea is that all these skills translate to other avenues in their life, such as school, such as music, such as the playing field, and the strategies apply to all those avenues in their life, because really the strategies, if they work on the sporting field with anxiety, if they're really valid, they should work in every avenue of their life.
All right, fine. Well, again, our guest is Greg Steinberg, and we're talking about his book. And do you have a parting thought for our listeners this evening?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
No, do you have a parting thought for our listeners this evening?
Well, a parting thought would be that Davis Love,
II used to tell his son, Davis Love III, who's a very famous golfer and one of the best golfers in the world, to follow his dreams and enjoy the journey. And I think that's real important. I think that children need to enjoy the journey, of competition, the journey of getting better, the journey of sport, the journey of life, and to enjoy it, not to take it so serious, and just to kind of go with the flow. I think that's really important. And of course, there's a chapter about that, a few chapters. So follow your dreams and enjoy the journey, I think, is essential.
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much, Greg. We appreciate you being with us this evening.
For having me.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and Sidney Craig is coming from a very humanistic point of view. How do you raise your child when you're not coming from a Christian point of view? I mean, what are the stories that we would do best to teach our child? Would it be best to teach them about Albert Einstein, who had several mistresses and really was very much of a scoundrel, and you read a lot of the theory of relativity, and you know, I have a lot of serious questions about some of the things that we've accepted, which I find very difficult to actually accept because they're not logical. And even though the many scientists proclaim Albert Einstein is a great mind, I would certainly seriously question this idea that if you travel in space, time stands still. That I've read his theories, and I do not believe that many of them are valid. Well, be that as it may, I believe, of course, we want to bring our children up in the way of the Lord. And I want to believe that the best way we can train them up is the way that they're raised with the fear of the Lord and respect for the love and love of the Lord. And of course, I believe that life is all about fearing the Lord and keeping His commandments, loving the Lord and keeping His commandments, worship the Lord and keeping His commandments. If we try without God to raise a child, He is eventually going to determine what's right and wrong on His own, and I can promise you He will accept the wrong views. I believe that raising a child today in the schools, in the public schools, where there is no value is taught, where children and values clarification are taught about the lifeboat, and of course there are only room for 9 people, and they're 13 or 14, and which one are you going to throw out of the lifeboat? What sort of a choice is that to give to a 14 or 15-year-old child? The values clarification that we're teaching in school is you decide what's right and wrong. And it's really up to you. And little wonder so many of our children are confused today. We don't tell them that drugs are wrong. We tell them they're going to have to make up their mind whether they're going to use drugs. We tell them that as far as sex is concerned, you make up your mind. Today we have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease, and a lot of the other have non-viral sexually transmitted diseases. The end result of a humanistic philosophy. I happen to believe that you raise children in the ways of the Lord, and of course they will carry that with all their lives, and that is the path to real happiness. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and certainly this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And I hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. I don't think that looking to yoga and breathing exercises and meditation is the road to happiness for our children. I believe that prayer to our Lord and looking to our Lord for guidance is the way that we should be going. But this is not what we're being taught in schools, and we had a lot of mix-up kids today. Ritalin, of course, has the property of being able to shrink growth and shrink the size of the brain and create real memory problems after using it for 3 years. And yet, We have millions of American children being placed on Ritalin and other psychotropic drugs. Why are we doing that? Well, I think that all you need to do is understand all the problems with Ritalin, and of course we can have to ask ourselves, is it that they don't know that you stunt growth, that you have a smaller brain, that these children will have permanent mental problems, or are teachers being given the wrong information intentionally? Well, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get much of the material we have here at Radio Liberty, which will answer these questions for you. There is an agenda out there. If you haven't heard my talk on Nundare College genocide, my talk on planned population reduction, my talk on population control, or our 4-tape set on population control, I hope every one of our listeners will want to get Dr. David Ayoub's excellent DVD, Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. Right now on television all across America, they're talking about the incidence of autism as 1 in 150, and they want you to go to their website. But they're not going to tell you the truth about autism. It is being produced by our vaccines, and it is destroying the lives of many of our children. 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and talking to Dr. Geyer and others who have evaluated this, believe that the mercury poison that we're giving our children, and of course, although they've taken this out of childhood vaccines, they've left it in the vaccines given to children. He believes that certainly every child, probably almost every child in America, has had some damage to their brain because of the vaccines, and not only the mercury there, but of course the aluminum, which worked with the mercury, and then the aluminum works with the fluoride, and 67% of our communities fluoridate the water, and then the aluminum in the vaccines, that and the fluoride together, have a devastating effect on the brain. And it's not that they don't know what's going on. They just do not want the American people to know what's going on, because some people would be incensed to think that they're poisoning their children. I believe, of course, we owe it to our children to protect them, to train them up in the ways of the Lord. But we also have to protect their physical bodies. And if you have not yet heard Dr. David Ayoub's talk, Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda, I think it's one of the finest talks we have, and certainly that, of course, comes with a CD-ROM. You get that in addition to the DVD, with literally thousands of pages of documentation of what Dr. Ayoub found as he began to research the mercury that they're poisoning our children with. But then, of course, they're also poisoning the elderly. This is in large part responsible for the epidemic of Alzheimer's disease. They know what's going on. They just don't want the public to know. It's sort of like, you know, it used to be that 3 people out of 100 would get cancer back in early 1900s. Today it's 30 or 40% of the people will develop cancer. And they say, oh, shucks, we have no idea what is happening. But of course, then they will give us faulty information, and they will put out faulty information to the public, telling them things that just aren't true. Remember, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and our children. And so please go to our website, Radio Liberty. Go to our number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.